right about it. Thank you. Thank you very much. No, that's not for me. No, that's actually the sound that came out of the floor of the state house in the state of Alabama yesterday. It was applause. Applause for passing something that is going to be talked about in liberal circles a lot. And we'll talk about that coming up here in just a couple of minutes on this Wednesday edition of The Daily Perspective. Hi there, Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host, driving the crazy train down the tracks that are the lunacy we face every day in everyday life. It's all about politics, life, and the universe as we know it. And I'm glad to have you along today. Thanks a lot for listening. It is, wow, there's so much to talk about today. And in the lead up, in the pre-show time, you know, you hear some tunes pop up. If you join the Facebook live broadcast, when you see the notice pop up in the mornings, then the notice pops up and there's music playing. When I'm sitting here looking at stories and shuffling and rearranging, I want to do this first. Let's push that one later. And I'm trying to decide what's going to fit in the hour that we have together. And, I mean, when you look at some of the stuff I'm not going to get to, I really, 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 really want to get to some of this stuff, but it's just not going to happen. It's just not going to happen, which is why you should subscribe to the newsletter so you can get the links to all the stuff, including the stuff I don't get to. But the mainstream press right now is talking about the Mueller report, and they're saying that Attorney General Barr has lied about the content of the report in his summary letter. He's facing inquisition today before Congress. You know, the usual thing. These self-important political people will sit and they'll each get 5 minutes and they will question him. Well, actually, they won't. They're having lawyers question him today, which is an interesting side because these guys have learned, I think, possibly they have learned that it is best not to appear on camera and be themselves because they're turning the American people off. So they're having lawyers do questioning today. Sure, I have a feeling that some of them will not be able to resist the allure of the TV cameras, so they will yak and yak and yak, but they're having lawyers do that questioning today. That's an interesting development. We'll look at that a little bit later on this morning. Also, Bernie Sanders is talking again, and he's making about as much sense as he always does. Joe Biden is talking again, and his speech is still slurring. Maybe we'll get to Venezuela. I don't know if we will, but we'll try to get to Venezuela today because what's happening there, you saw the video yesterday. If you've been paying attention, you saw the video of Maduro's troops using vehicles to run over protesters. They're shooting at people. Cuba is in country now in Venezuela. Russia is behind some of this as well. We've seen reports that Maduro was actually on his way to board a plane to flee the country yesterday, and he got a phone call from Cuba, from Russia, saying, no, stay put. So there's a lot of stuff going on in Venezuela, and I'm not sure if we'll be able to get to it today. I hope we can. But let's start at the top of the stack, and that is in my home state, the state of Alabama. The Alabama House voted overwhelmingly yesterday to outlaw almost all abortions in the state as conservatives took aim at the 1973 U.S. Supreme Court decision that legalized abortion nationwide. The Republican-dominated House of Representatives voted 74-3 for legislation that would make it a felony to perform an abortion at any stage in a woman's pregnancy. The proposal passed after Democrats walked out of the chamber after sometimes emotional debate with opponents and supporters crowding the gallery. The bill now moves to the Alabama Senate. Supporters said the bill is intentionally designed to conflict with the U.S. Supreme Court's landmark 1973 Roe v. Wade decision, legalizing abortion nationally, hoping to spark court cases that might prompt the justices to revisit Roe. The bill contains an exemption for situations in which there is a serious risk to the mother's health, but not for rape and incest. Before we move forward, there's a little bit more to go here. Before we move forward, just understand that the percentage of abortion performed legitimately for rape and incest is microscopic. It is microscopic. There is so little of it actually performed for that reason. But those reasons, rape and incest, are the two reasons your liberal friends screech about whenever they're challenged about abortion. But abortion is not done for rape or incest, by and large. It's the percentage is so small, you can almost say it never happens. Almost. Not quite, but almost. Most all abortion is done for convenience. That's what it's for. Because for whatever reason, it's inconvenient for someone to be pregnant. I'll just say this and then I'll move on. When people misbehave, there are consequences to their misbehavior. And abortion is there to eliminate consequences. That's what it's for. Now, the heart of this bill, says Republican Terry Collins of Decatur, is to confront a decision that was made by the courts in 1973 that said the baby in a womb is not a person. Republicans in the chamber applauded after the bill was approved. After more than 2 hours of sometimes emotional debate, Collins acknowledged that such a ban would likely be struck down by lower courts, but she said the aim is eventually to get to the Supreme Court. Without the numbers to stop the bill, Democrats walked off the House floor ahead of the vote, calling the proposal both extreme and fiscally irresponsible. They said the ban would cost the state money for a potentially expensive legal fight that could be spent on other needs. Isn't that a twisted set of priorities, that they include finance in the concerns instead of humanity? Oh, it's going to cost a lot of money. Really? Representative Louise Alexander, a Democrat, said the choice to give birth to a child should be left up to a woman and the decision should not be made on the floor of the Alabama legislature. Quote, "You don't know why I may want to have an abortion. It may be because of my health. It may be because of many reasons. Until all of you in this room walk in a woman's shoes, y'all don't know," Alexander said. But the bill includes a provision for health. Everything else, except for the microscopic cases of rape and incest, everything else is convenience. Everything else. It's convenience, it's embarrassment, it's as I said, it's to eliminate the consequences of misbehavior. Emboldened by new conservatives on the Supreme Court, abortion opponents in several states are seeking to incite new legal fights in the hopes of challenging Roe v. Wade. The Alabama bill comes on the heels of several states considering or approving bans on abortion once a fetal heartbeat is detected, which occurs in about the sixth week of pregnancy. The Alabama bill attempts to go farther by banning abortion at any stage of pregnancy. House Republicans voted down Democrats' attempt to amend the bill to add an exemption for rape and incest. And as I've already stated, there are reasons for that, because those exceptions are blown way out of proportion because that those instances are microscopic. The reason being they didn't include this is because they want this to go, and they want it to go to the Supreme Court. They want it to. And House Minority Leader, Democrat Anthony Daniels, said they would not even allow an exception for rape and incest. What does that say to the women in this state? It says two things, Mr. Daniels. It says that rape and incest are a microscopic portion of actual real cases of abortion. And it says, two, the purpose for this is to rattle cages and get attention on the Supreme Court level. That's the two reasons. Because they want this to be challenged. They want it to go to the Supreme Court. They want the fight. Because they want to expose Roe v. Wade for what it really is. Bad legislation built on lies. if you've done your research, if you've done any reading whatsoever on this topic, you know that Roe versus Wade was built on a lie. And the woman who played the part of Roe, not her real name, even today, today as we speak, speaks to groups of people and tells them that she was involved in a lie. So what these people are trying to do in the Alabama legislature, they're trying to rattle enough cages to get this heard at the Supreme Court level in the hopes of challenging Roe v. Wade. Because Roe v. Wade is bad law, built on lies. And truth must prevail. A Birmingham Democrat, Representative Rolanda Hollis, read a poem, of course. Why is it these leftists, these progressives, these liberals, always resort to some sort of art form in order to protest? She read a poem that criticized Republicans' embrace of gun rights but not abortion rights and later referred to the state as Alabackwards. Well, there's a state line very close to the east, to the west, to the north, to the south. Feel free to go someplace you don't feel is so backwards, Representative Hollis. Move along. The text of the Alabama bill likens legalized abortion to history's greatest atrocities, including the Holocaust. And I want to bring this to you right now. It's not going to take long. Just one, two, three, four paragraphs. Here we go. The bill states this. The state's statute criminalizing abortion, which is section 137A through dash 13 dash 7, Code of Alabama 1975, has never been repealed. It has remained unenforceable as a result of the U.S. Supreme Court decision in Roe v. Wade, 410 U.S. 113, and its progeny, which struck down as unconstitutional a Texas statute criminalizing abortion and which effectively repealed by implication and made unenforceable all other state statutes criminalizing abortion. On November 6, 2018, electors in this state approved by a majority vote a constitutional amendment to the Constitution of Alabama of 1901, declaring and affirming the public policy of the state to recognize and support the sanctity of unborn life and the rights of unborn children. The amendment made it clear that the Constitution of Alabama does not include a right to an abortion or require the funding of abortions using public funds. Abortion, abortion advocates speak to women's rights, but they ignore the unborn child. While medical science has increasingly recognized the humanity of the unborn child, recent medical advances prove a baby's heart starts and fetal Doppler can detect a fetal heartbeat as early as 13 weeks. It is estimated that 6 million Jewish people were murdered in German concentration camps during World War II. 3 million people were executed by Joseph Stalin's regime in Soviet gulags. 2.5 million people were murdered during the Chinese Great Leap Forward in 1958. 1.5 to 3 million people were murdered by the Khmer Rouge in Cambodia during the 1970s. And approximately 1 million people were murdered during the Rwanda genocide in 1994. All of these are widely acknowledged to have been crimes against humanity. By comparison, more than 50 million babies have been aborted in the United States since the Roe decision in 1973. More than three times the number who were killed in German death camps, Chinese purges, Stalin's gulags, Cambodian killing fields, and the Rwandan genocide combined. And it's that last paragraph that I think is so powerful. It is drawing the truth. More than 50 million children have been killed in the United States for the sake of convenience since the decision in 1973. That speaks to the selfishness of the state of humanity in our country today, that it is so important to have your own will and your own way and to abdicate your responsibility to the result of your actions, that you must have the legal right to destroy the inconvenience which is growing inside your body. Another human being. And no, this is not a question about what you do with your body, ma'am. Because we're talking about a different individual here. Someone who needs your protection. Someone who is not an inconvenience, but who will provide an incredible life full of blessing for you if you can just embrace the reality that it is a person and not just the clump of cells that Planned Parenthood and the other abortion clinics lie to you and tell you it is. And that's what's happening in Alabama today. More as the Daily Perspective continues on the other side of the break. You are listening to The Daily Perspective. Hi there, Mark Congleton here. Good to have you along today. It is a twisted day in America. It really is. When human life is so devalued that we allow certain things to go on. And it's getting worse and worse. The problem is that progressivism, liberalism has taken over. And we've allowed this weed of progressivism to continue growing in our garden, so to speak. And it has taken over. It's become so prevalent that now, instead of just weeding, we've got a real fight on our hands. And oddly enough, that's kind of the progressive plan. Part of the plan for takeover is to make things so unmanageable that you have to scrap everything and start from scratch. And that's the Cloward and Piven approach. And go look up Cloward and Piven. It's documented. It's been around for decades. It's how this is done, where you just overwhelm the system with problems. That's what's happening at our southern border right now. They're overwhelming our system. And the left will eventually demand naturalization and amnesty and naturalization of all of these people who came here illegally, because that will be the only viable choice. Because how do you deport all of these people? Well, one at a time if necessary. But there has to be a sane way to handle things, and unfortunately that's almost impossible when you have progressives in the mix spouting insanity, which appeals to emotionalism, which then appeals to votes. It's just a crazy situation. I was thinking earlier this morning, it's a lot like the house my wife and I live in. It was built nearly 50 years ago. The previous occupants of the house thought wisteria was just gorgeous. So there was a wisteria vine on the deck behind the house that went up to an arbor over the top of the deck, and it provided shade. And in the spring, for a couple of weeks, a week or so, it was really pretty with all of the blooms. There is another arbor over the garage, over the two garage doors. And that one was just gorgeous in the springtime when wisteria blooms. It also was a magnet for the neighbor's bee. Our neighbor had, at one time, had beehives, kept bees. And when we first moved in, it was like you could park, because we still had a lot of stuff, boxes and stuff in the garage as we were merging into the house. You know how that goes when you move? It takes a while to get all of the boxes sorted through. And in our case, they're all stacked up in the garage and we're parking in the driveway while we're doing the processing. And we're parking under that arbor covered in wisteria. And every time you get out of the cars, there's this low hum because the thing is filled with bees. They're out there and they're going back to the beehive next door. And I ran into the same situation when I was working on the pool, because they were coming over for water. They didn't care about me. They just wanted water. And eventually I just got to the point where I would say, hey, spread out, move, because I knew they weren't going to sting me. I could walk right through them. It didn't bother them. They were just there for the water. But the wisteria, eventually, if you don't have the time to stay on top of it, as the retired people who lived in this house before did, then it eventually finds its way into everything. There are wisteria vines. I discover them every week. I find them running along the ground, under the grass, across the end of the concrete on the driveway, creeping up. There's a magnolia tree on the corner of my backyard that I just noticed yesterday has these bright green leaves sprouting from between the dark green magnolia leaves. It's wisteria. It's gotten up this magnolia tree. It will eventually choke it and kill it if I don't do something about it, which this week I'll have to do. And as pretty as wisteria is, as lovely as it appears on the side of the road as you're passing by it, if it is on your property, eventually it will cover your property unless you almost make a full-time job out of keeping it down. And unfortunately, that's how things are with the progressive ideas. They look really pretty. They sound really great. Ah, that's beautiful. What a brilliant idea. That's kind and fair to everybody. The problem is, it's not really. And when it digs its roots in, you can't get rid of it. Unless you get to the roots and you find a successful way to eliminate it. And unfortunately, that takes a lot. It takes a lot. So right now, in America, we're seeing the progressives in our government. We're going to watch that happen today. If you're a news junkie, you will watch probably on television these hearings in Congress as Attorney General Barr sits in front of all of these clowns and they posture for the cameras and they take their 5 minutes and ask him questions which have no basis in reality or the law. And they try to make a case that he somehow is working for the president and not for the people. And one of the things that's going on, one of the things that's being said, is that that Robert Mueller has contradicted Attorney General Barr. Democrats in the media think it's Mueller time again because they got beaten in their first attempt to remove President Trump. They thought the Mueller report was going to be what cinched it all up for them, but no. A new report by the Washington Post yesterday gave renewed life to the resistance belief that President Donald Trump colluded with Russia and obstructed justice. And if you watched CNN or MSNBC last night or read Twitter, you might believe that Attorney General Bill Barr lied to protect President Trump. Here's what CNN said. Special Counsel Robert Mueller expressed concerns in a letter to Attorney General William Barr that Barr's four-page letter to Congress summarizing the principal conclusions of Mueller's findings didn't fully capture his 448-page report, according to a source with knowledge of Mueller's letter. Now, that's typical for CNN, according to a source. Later, Barr and Mueller spoke by phone, and while Mueller didn't think Barr's letter was inaccurate, the special counsel believed his report was more nuanced on the obstruction of justice issue, according to Justice Department officials. Mueller was frustrated by the media coverage and wanted more of a report to come out, those officials told CNN. Barr's position was he wasn't going to do so in a piecemeal way, so he was pushing the special counsel's office to finish the redactions of the full report as soon as possible. At the same time, senior justice officials have been puzzled by Mueller's decision not to reach a conclusion on the obstruction of issue, and Barr felt he needed to provide finality on the matter as the attorney general. But if we take a look at that again, even in CNN's own story, it says Barr and Mueller spoke by phone, and while Mueller didn't think Barr's letter was inaccurate, he didn't think it was inaccurate. The gist of Mueller's correspondence with Attorney General Barr was about how the media was mischaracterizing the report. But the Democrats are grasping at straws. They're just grasping at straws. Now, this morning, in the run-up to the show, as I'm, you know, finishing coffee and shuffling things and the like, I was watching the news, and I saw this report on Fox News this morning, and I never did catch this reporter's name. He's a correspondent standing in front of the White House talking about this very story. And I think it's interesting.
Through the process. Effectively, what we've learned is Bob Mueller or those on his team have effectively complained to Bill Barr about the characterization. You may remember right after the special counsel's report came out, Bill Barr said, I just want to give you sort of a general overview of the principal findings, right? Well, he told the Washington Post, Bob Mueller did, that the letter that he basically put out there did not fully capture the context, nature, and substance of this office's work and conclusions. Well, that's apparently what Mueller told Barr, according to the Washington Post and an anonymous source at the Post. Well, here's the letter from the DOJ on the Mueller letter to Bill Barr. It says, after the Attorney General received Special Counsel Mueller's letter, he called him to discuss it. In a cordial and professional conversation, the special counsel emphasized that nothing in the AG's March 24 letter was inaccurate or misleading. But he expressed frustration over the lack of context and the resulting media coverage regarding the special counsel's obstruction analysis. They then discussed whether additional context from the report would be helpful and could be quickly released. However, the AG ultimately determined that it would not be productive to release the report in piecemeal fashion. It goes on to say this, the AG and special counsel agreed to get the full report out with necessary redactions as expeditiously as possible. The next day, the AG sent a letter to Congress reiterating that its March 24th letter was not intended to be a summary of the report, but instead, as I pointed out to you, only stated the special counsel's principal conclusions. There it is. And volunteered to testify before the Senate and the House Judiciary Committees on May 1st and 2nd. That from the spokesperson for the DOJ. All right. So what's Bill Barr saying? He's effectively saying this was not meant to be exhaustive. I'm going to lay out all my thoughts based on what I've read from the report, redactions notwithstanding. We'll see what he has to say about it. Of course, the House, keep in mind, they want him to come and they want him to talk to lawyers from the staff. He's pushing back on that, but the Senate will get their first crack. Interesting times, to say the least, guys.
Yeah. And remember, what the press, like CNN, is trying to convince you is that Mueller was unhappy with the letter, the summary letter, and disagreed with it. But in truth, he didn't disagree. He was unhappy with what the press was saying about the letter, and that the press was mischaracterizing what it said. This is the Daily Perspective. Welcome back. Good to have you here. If you're listening to the podcast version of the show, you're thinking, where'd I go? Oh, man, oh, man. It's the midweek edition of the show. This show is being recorded on the 1st of May, Wednesday, May 1, 2019. Welcome to the month of May. Hope you've got a beautiful day in your neighborhood. You know, when you look at the way that progressives, leftists, liberals, Democrats approach challenges, you start recognizing a pattern, and that is that when they're challenged with the reality of a situation which contradicts their assertions, they immediately switch into defensive mode and start blaming people and assigning really nasty, nasty values to the reasons that they could be challenged. And an example is crazy Bernie Sanders, Senator Bernie Sanders, listed as an independent from Vermont. The guy's a socialist. He talks about democratic socialism. And the bottom line with Bernie is, this is a guy who years ago actually celebrated with communists, sang communist songs with them, drank with them. This guy, he's a millionaire. Come on, if it weren't for capitalism, Bernie Sanders would not have a job. Actually, he's never had a real job. He's always been a rabble-rouser on the left and worked his way into government. He's never had a real job. Well, yesterday, because he's been challenged about his stance on convicts, felons, being able to vote, he lashed out. He accused Republicans of opposing voting rights for inmates. Why? Because they want to suppress the votes of minority communities. So, letting the Boston Marathon bomber, not letting him vote. Telling the Boston Marathon bomber, no, you plotted and you killed people. You can no longer vote is an attack on minority communities. You don't have to be crazy to be Bernie Sanders, but it helps. Even Brooke Baldwin at CNN raised an eyebrow and thought, that's kooky. She brought up his opinion piece in USA Today. Did you see his opinion piece? Bernie was angry. Angry Bernie. It was so angry, I didn't even want to bring it here. God, this guy's nuts. We've already covered this. Well, she brought that up yesterday, calling for felons to be enfranchised, which came after his headline-grabbing claim that the Boston Marathon bomber should be allowed to vote. Baldwin pointed out that polls now show that felons' voting rights are pretty low on Democratic voter priority lists. Way below climate change, Medicare for all, gun control, other issues, most of them all made up by leftists. Sanders said having to answer the question about felons voting on CNN is part of, quote, how politics works, end quote. But he stands by his original answer, saying that President Donald Trump and Republicans are infringing on voting rights. And so the proper response is repealing all restrictions. Well, I really hope you've got something to wrap your head with, because it's going to explode. Quote, you pay a price when you commit a crime, but this is what I believe. At a time when the Republican Party and Donald Trump are working overtime to suppress the vote, to make it harder for people of color, poor people, young people, to vote, we've got to make it clear, in my view, that if you're an American citizen, and even if you do something terrible, even if you're a bad person, we cannot take away your right to vote, whether you are in jail or whether you left jail. So says Sanders. Sanders is now officially the conductor of the crazy train. He's crazy. He argued preventing felons and inmates from voting is part of a Republican strategy to drive down voter turnout among minority communities. Quote, clearly, what the Republicans are doing is trying to deny people of color the right to vote, and this is an issue I think we have to address head on. You see, what he's doing is he is now trying to move the focus to voter suppression, to move it away from his crazy proposition that murderers and rapists should be allowed to vote. That's just crazy. He's trying to move that to minority voter suppression. And this is not what the issue is. By the way, Republicans are not trying to suppress the vote for anyone, except for people voting illegally. And the Democrats even deny that's going on because it benefits them. Well, Brooke Baldwin managed to get a word in edgewise. She said, well, even Democrats disagree with you. And Sanders replied, he waved his finger at the camera while he was doing it, like he's lecturing you. He said, yeah, but let me say this. 4 years ago, people disagreed with me on Medicare for all, raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour, criminal justice reform, spending $1 trillion on rebuilding our infrastructure. People disagreed with me. They'll disagree with me now, but I'll tell you what I think, and that is, if you're a citizen of this country, you have the right to vote, and I will oppose all efforts to try to deny Americans the right to participate in our democracy. One, we don't have a democracy. We have a representative republic. A democracy is two wolves and a sheep deciding what's for lunch. A representative republic is us sending people to represent our interests. That is the difference. Now, he's talked about a handful of things. Medicare for all. When we have examined Medicare for all, we have found that it will destroy our healthcare coverage system in America. It will explode the cost. And in order to make it happen, your taxes will almost have to go to 100%. You won't be able to keep the money you make. raising minimum wage to $15 an hour. Every place it's happened, it's been a fiasco, a disaster. People have lost hours on the job. Businesses have lost customers because they've had to increase prices. It's a disaster. It doesn't work. Rebuilding the infrastructure? Well, Donald Trump has just had a meeting with the Democrats. They've agreed on spending $2 trillion, but they haven't agreed on where it's coming from. And I have a feeling that when they get down to that and President Trump says, okay, you need to cut spending in these places to come up with that $2 trillion, they're going to pitch a hissy fit. Because we can't increase spending. We have to change spending. In fact, we have to cut spending because we're already $22 trillion in debt. Now, Sanders, of course, cited Canada and Israel's practice of enfranchising felons to support America following suit. By the way, I have a feeling if you look at those instances, they're very different than what he's talking about. In the U.S., Sanders' own state, Vermont and Maine, they allow felons to vote while they're in prison. That would explain how the Democrats keep control there, don't you think? The rest of the country has a variety of regulations about how they handle this. President Trump's decision to back criminal justice reform legislation last year was hailed by many as a step forward for minorities. There is progress on that front. But to frame this, Sanders' insane position on allowing convicted felons to vote, to frame the objection as oppression of minority votes is just desperate. It's absolutely desperate. But that's what he's doing. Listen, he's crazy. And here's another example. He's calling for Disney to use the profits from the Avengers Endgame, which is just breaking all kinds of records, right? All of this money that's coming in, he wants them to pay all of their employees a living wage. Now, that term, a living wage, is one of those emotional, progressive terms. It's designed to elicit a response from you that says, well, that's fair. They should have a living wage. Well, I'll tell you what. Disney employees will tell you they don't make a lot of money. And they will tell you they agreed to what they're making and they're working their way up. If they're going to be there for any length of time, they're trying to find. Unless they're retirees working part-time or kids working part-time, they're trying probably to find a path within the company to move forward. I happen to know a handful of Disney employees, and they're not children. These are people who are working their way into other positions in the company. Some have been there for 20 years, and they're not doing too badly. It's just like working for McDonald's. You're never going to make any money there unless you get on the career path. And if you get on the career path, eventually you're going to own franchises. And at some point, you could actually be an executive in the company if you follow the career path. But using that term living wage is deceptive. Monday, Bernie criticized the gap between Disney CEO Bob Iger's fiscal 2018 pay and that of his employees. Iger makes $65.6 million, and he says that's 1,400 times as much as the average worker at Disney makes. Let's divide $65.6 million by 201,000. That's how many Disney employees there are. That's 300 and I got the figure somewhere. It's something like $326 a piece. So even if you did eat the rich and take Iger's pay, each employee would only get $326. That $1.22 billion debut of Avengers Endgame, that's not going to Bob Iger or all to Disney. Disney has shareholders, people who actually own the company. That's where that money's going. And Bernie is trying to fog things up so you don't understand how things work. This is The Daily Perspective. Hi there. Have you subscribed to the newsletter yet? The newsletter, as I explain each day, is my text links, or the links to all the stories. So everything I've talked about, the Alabama House approving the abortion ban, Mueller didn't say that Attorney General Barr lied. He said the media lied. Bernie Sanders, the craziness with Bernie Sanders. All of that, including the story we're about to talk about here about Joe Biden. That's all in the newsletter today, as well as the Equality Act. Does it really create equality for women? The answer, no. It's just symbolism over substance again, coming from the left, which is what happens every time they propose legislation to be heroes. It's symbolism, and it actually creates more problems than it solves. It's just nuts. Let's see, what else is there? Is there going to be a 50th anniversary Woodstock Festival? That's one of the stories. It's in the stack. I don't know if I'm going to get to it. I've just got a few minutes left here. Diversity. You hear about diversity a lot. Do progressives really want real diversity? Or do they want power and control? You may have seen the story about the trans athlete, the power lifter, who's just demolishing records, world records, but it's a guy. And I don't care what the guy says, it's still a guy. He's taking drugs, having surgery. His DNA still tells the truth. Still a guy. And he's going to be able to outlift girls every time. And the insanity is that the sports authorities are saying, yeah, we'll accept that. So women's athletics is getting flushed down the toilet. I feel sorry for women who are competitors because of things like that. That story is also in the stack. I'm not going to get to that today, although I did just comment on it. Antifa has been active at the southern border. Did you know about that? They tried to buy weapons from a Mexican cartel. Antifa is trying to get involved at our border to fight our border patrol to allow more illegal immigrants to cross the border into our country. Antifa is doing that. They've been caught. That's a story that I wish I could get to today. I'm not going to. And that I mentioned it a while ago about Trump and the Democrats agreeing to spend $2 trillion on infrastructure. And that's one of those things during election times politicians trot out. They talk about our crumbling roads and bridges and how this country needs to spend more money on infrastructure. And I think this country needs to pay more attention and spend some more time looking at what the responsibility of our federal government is versus the responsibility of our state governments, and how much responsibility are the roads and bridges in our country. How much is that your state? I think if you do your studying, you'll find out most of it's your state's responsibility. You should be fussing at them if you've got potholes everywhere, not at the federal government. You do not want the federal government involved in your state's business. You want it involved as little as possible. There's that old saying, I'm here from the government, I'm here to help. I'm from the government, I'm here to help. The most frightening words you should ever hear. Because anytime the government comes in, everything goes nuts, 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 nuts. And unfortunately, what we have running for president on the Democrat side is people who want to help. People like Joe Biden. Since he's announced he's running for president, we've seen him make a couple of appearances. Is he up to it? Can he physically handle the challenges of a national campaign? So far, it's not looking good. Yesterday, we talked about that video of Biden slurring his words during his first speech as a candidate for the 2020 race. Almost every sentence was peppered with verbal stumbles. He opened up with, I want to thank Rich Fitzgerald, the county executive for the Allegheny County executive for being here. The county wasn't built by Wall Street banker CEOs and hedge fund managers. That's supposed to be hedge fund managers. At various points, he stumbled over words like dignity, successful, hospitals. Sometimes they were so mashed up, you couldn't tell what he was trying to say. It's It's just crazy. And he was at it again yesterday. He made another speech yesterday. And he was slurring and stumbling through this one as well.
Think about it. Think about it. The new emerging corporate culture. Think about it, with this new tax cut, you got twice as many corporations making billions without paying no taxes at all.
That's a lie.
I mean, it's not about, I know you're supporting by saying booing, but look, here's the deal. It's just simply not right. It's simply not right. And folks, look, the idea that that you're in a position where dignity doesn't even come into the thought process of so many employers these days. And you know,
he's gone off script. When you watch this video, you can see that he's gone off script. And at the very end there, he's looking down trying to find his place. He is improvising and he can't string thoughts together. And in his position, even though the polling, you know what I think about polling, even though the polling says he is the front runner by a good margin among these Democrat candidates, he is struggling. I mean, he is struggling when he's doing these speeches. And the media, the press, the people who have declared it their responsibility to speak truth, not just to power, but to everybody, they're ignoring this. They're embracing him. Meghan McCain said on The View, and they just loved her for it, that she would continue to hug him. That she, you keep being a hugger, Joe. She loves it. And she's standing with Joe Biden. And we discussed that before. The reason is that she hates Donald Trump because of what he said about her father, who was so vicious to him and dealt with him in an extremely hateful manner. But the media is pushing Joe Biden because they believe that he doesn't represent the crazy train. He doesn't represent, they don't see him as one in the clown car with all of the rest of these people like Bernie Sanders and Hiawatha, Pocahontas, and the rest. They don't see him as one of these who are off the rails to the left. They see him as being a more rational, reasonable choice with links back to the Obama years, which everybody loves so much. So they're standing behind him and they're not talking about these things. I'll talk about them here. Other conservatives in media will talk about them. But the mainstream press is not going to talk about Joe Biden stumbling through his speeches. You got to remember that Joe Biden was part of the team that campaigned on fundamentally transforming the United States of America. Those 8 years were about turning the Constitution of the United States of America on its end and ignoring every word of it because it was unfair. Those years were about instituting a system, a progressive system, which ignored the laws of our nation and pushed us towards socialism. Those years were fraught with scandal. One of the things Biden said was that one of the things he was the proudest of was that there was not even a whisper of scandal during those 8 years. If you do a little bit of searching, just a little, you will find lists of things that happened. Lists of things that happened during the Obama years. The press during the Obama years had a lot to fear. Trump may be saying that the press, the leftists, progressive press, is the enemy of the people because they're deceiving the people. And in this particular case, they are, by not talking about how this man is struggling during his speeches to make sense and slurring his words. They are not telling you the truth. But during the Obama years, do a little research and you'll find out that Obama and Biden and that administration, they were very hostile to the press. And yet, the progressive press won't tell you about that. They're so delusional. They have such strong Trump derangement syndrome that they will not tell you the truth about what Obama and Biden did to them during those years, because they've been personally insulted by a president who tells the truth about them. They would push a man who can't make it through a speech without stumbling to be our next president. And that's sad. And that's the end of today's show. God bless you. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.